So we know what happened on Tuesday. The budget for 2023 was announced. Owen spoke to the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar on Wednesday. And, you know, it was kind of said by the Finance Minister, Pascal Donoghue, and also the Public Expenditure Minister that the purse wasn't fully closed, I guess you could say, for the year. Now, Leo Varadkar did say on Kildare Today on Wednesday morning that absolutely not, there will be no mini budget in 2023. But that does not mean that, you know, additional credits may be discussed by government. Nothing like that has been ruled out. But a mini budget happening next year, definitely not. So obviously a lot of people have been researching the budget, how it will affect people, etc. And one of those groups is the ESRI. And they have a new research release today. These one-off budget measures, they're saying it will, which is great positive news. We want to take all the positive news we possibly can, will insulate most households from inflation this winter. But there are some questions about next winter. But we'll focus on the here and now in the next few months as only we can do. And Dr. Barra Rowntree joins me now. He's a research officer with the ESRI. Good afternoon to you, Dr. Rowntree.
Afternoon, thanks for having me on.
So if we start with, I guess, you know, quote unquote, good news, most, it seems, households will be insulated by these one-off payments. Tell me a bit more how you know this.
Yeah, so what we've done is to take a look at the budget measures and to see how that stacks up against a budget where, you know, tax credits, bans, and where also welfare payments all went up by inflation. And what our research has kind of shown is that actually for most households, the one-off measures in particular and those double payments in terms of welfare payments and the kind of bonuses that have been announced, which, you know, we're going to get an energy credit in November and then another two early next year, that those are going to mean that essentially the worst bits of the energy price increase over this winter, most households are going to be insulated from the you know, really extreme losses. There will be some who will still, you know, particularly those really high energy users, are going to see their bills jump up, and you know, the combination of payments the government announced won't be enough. But really, the measures are going to do an awful lot to mitigate the worst impacts of the crisis over this winter. But what we've also pointed to at the same time is that because it's the once-off measures that are really doing that heavy lifting, in the new year, and you know, when it gets to kind of like the summer and the winter, if energy prices are still high, the fact that welfare benefits have now for 2 years in a row not kept track with inflation, the fact that the same is true for most tax credits and thresholds, that's going to mean that actually people might face real issues of adequacy into kind of the latter half of next year if, again, energy prices are still high and haven't really kind of unwound.
And just to keep people up to date this afternoon, it's moving away a little bit, but obviously directly related. Putin, he did announce the annexation, that is, of course, the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, of four Ukraine territories, they say, at a lavish ceremony this afternoon. So referendums were held in four regions of Ukraine, Luhansk, Donetsk, Kherson and Zaporizhia. They are the regions there. So what Putin did say in his announcement, this is his direct quote: "I want to say this to the Kyiv regime and its masters in the West. People living in the Luhansk, Donetsk, Kherson and Zaporizhia regions are becoming our citizens forever." He said that they again, in quotes, made an unambiguous choice joining Russia. He continues by saying, "We will defend our lands with every means possible, with every means necessary." He said that they call on the Kyiv regime to immediately stop fighting and stop all hostilities and return to the negotiating table. Now, Barra, I know you can't directly comment on what's happening in Russia or in terms of Ukraine politics, but we have heard from the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky saying that there's no way after these sham referendums, as they were referred to by himself and leaders of the West, being held in those four regions, that he'll be returning to negotiating table with Russia when Vladimir Putin is president. Doesn't look like Putin is going to change his mind anytime soon, especially from that speech today. So is it wise of our government to expect that extra credits are going to be needed in the middle of 2023 and in the winter of 2023? Because this war is directly affecting our prices.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ultimately, the high energy prices are mostly, overwhelmingly down to the actions of Russia invading Ukraine and the ongoing conflict there. And so, again, the longer that persists, the longer prices are going to stay high. And really, it is kind of, in a way, very much out of the hands of the Irish government in terms of that. That's an external development, and nothing really we can do to change that. And because we are a net importer of energy prices, we're fundamentally just worse off as a country by the fact that the energy prices have gone up so much. And so really the question for our government then is, by how much do they compensate people? Because they can't compensate everyone for the entirety of the increase. To do so would only risk stoking further inflation and would, you know, be a huge, huge expense, which even with our bumper corporation tax receipts, it doesn't seem a particularly sensible idea. So given that, it really is then the question for government, how do they mitigate the losses for people? And the way they've done that is to give people these once-off bonuses. And in a way, I think there's a large degree of sense to that. What that means is that it's a very uncertain situation. We can kind of see where we are after this winter. And because, again, people's bills do kind of tend to come, you know, there isn't that much of a high energy bill for most households over the summer months. And so in a way, we can kind of see where we are again at that stage, and the nature of the response, I suppose, can be recalibrated or relooked at again. And so there is, I think, giving themselves the extra time to see how developments play out, there is a degree of sense to. But ultimately, again, the government can't protect everyone from the entirety of these price increases. So it really is about how do you mitigate the worst impacts of that. And we know, again, from the numbers that have come out from the CSO and others, that inflation, while it's running high for everyone, is running higher for lower income households, for older households and for those in rural areas, simply because they spend more of their total expenditure on energy and food. So, again, it really is about, I suppose, targeting, and it's not a bad idea for the government to hold off and to see how things are next year before recalibrating its position.
Yeah, lower income households will experience real terms cuts in living standards if there is no repeat of these bonuses of welfare and the lump sum payments in next year's budget 2024 announcement. If we look a little elsewhere, aside from energy, you know, and the cost of living crisis, we have a housing crisis in this country. And you did look at that. The government did announce a range of interventions in the housing market. So things like the triple rate of the local property tax on certain vacant residential dwellings. Now, that's, you know, on those dwellings, but anybody else, their LPT hasn't been reduced. I know it's up to county councils when it does come to that, and it will be, you know, at the choice, I guess, of would say Kildare County Council. And if you look elsewhere, Barra, the extension of the Help to Buy scheme for another 2 years, 350 million there, estimating that will cost. And then the levy on the concrete products for the defective buildings, such as the MICA redress scheme. All those three taken into account, just how beneficial is that, would say, for those who are the hidden homeless?
Yes. So in terms of the measures the government's announced on housing, there's kind of a mixed bag, I suppose. There's some, I think, things are quite welcome. The vacant, the surcharge in terms of local property tax on properties that are vacant for more than a year. That's something which is, I think, a welcome addition to the suite of supply side measures that the government is kind of looking at. So I think in that sense, that's a welcome step forward, even though it's not going to maybe do a huge amount, but it is, I think, a welcome development. In terms of the Help to Buy scheme, what we've said about that scheme previously is that, you know, while those who benefit from it, of course, will be extremely appreciative and it helps them. Actually, if you look across the groups of people who are claiming it, what it looks like is happening is that it's not necessarily helping people who, you know, most of the beneficiaries aren't people who wouldn't have otherwise bought. It rather seems to be helping them buy larger homes. And so there's a question then about how well targeted that is, and also the upward pressure places on property prices in general. Because if you're giving, you know, first-time buyers of new homes up to 30 grand to spend on properties, that's going to put upward pressure on house prices for everyone. And then, so really, we know that the government solution to the housing crisis, and the diagnosis is pretty common across most people, is that we need a lot more housing built for a sustained period of time, and in particular, social and affordable housing. But from that point of view, it's a bit hard to square that objective, which I think, again, everyone has kind of agreed on, with the decision to introduce new concrete products levy. So there's going to be a 10% levy on certain concrete products, pouring concrete, concrete block, precast concrete. And what that's going to do is increase the cost of supplying these new dwellings. And again, given the state of the market, what we can anticipate is going to happen is that's going to be passed on to the residents of these new buildings, be they renters in the form of higher rents on these newly built properties or those who buy them. So that's a bit of a hard one to square with, I suppose, the government's wider objectives in terms of housing.
And what the government would have said about that, the concrete levy over the past few days, is that this, you know, these redress schemes need to be paid for. And that's the country's best bet. What would you say to that as an expert in your field?
Well, rather, I think what we see is that we have a lot of corporation tax receipts coming in, right? And we have this broader problem that, you know, without those corporation tax receipts, we would have actually been running quite a big deficit this year. The corporation tax receipts are paying for a lot of things. And we've now correctly, I think, started to try to put aside some of those because it's not always clear they're going to be there for We're kind of heavily reliant on a small number of companies to pay those corporation tax receipts. But again, that's, you know, we've announced the micro redress scheme. It's going to be a large scheme, and it's going to be very beneficial towards those households who have been suffering from the horrible problems there in relation to their dwellings. But again, it's a once-off large cost. So from that point of view, that's one of the type of things that it makes sense to use some of these excess corporation tax revenues to pay from. It's not clear why you want to have a levy, a dedicated levy to pay for this, rather than a kind of general taxation or indeed some of those excess corporation tax receipts. So from that point of view, I don't think it makes a lot of sense, and I think it does risk going against some of the government's other wider objectives, because ultimately we don't think this levy is going to be paid by the industry. It's going to be paid by the residents of those newly built properties, and it's not clear why they should be the ones rather than taxpayers or society in general paying for the micro redress scheme.
That's really, really interesting to highlight it like that. Thank you so much. That's Dr. Barra Rowntree, Research Officer with the ESRI. Always has great time for us. Thank you so much, Barra. And good afternoon to you. And just to let people know, Barra, obviously going through some of the research the ESRI has conducted regarding Budget 2023. But I've just received a snap down here on our newswire, and there's a record number of people that are living in homeless accommodation. That's for the second month in a row. Elsewhere, if you look at inflation in the Eurozone, it's estimated to have reached a record high of 10% this month, an increase from 9.1% in August. The figures were released by Eurostat. So the inflation is in this country, Ireland, it's up by 8.6% in the 12 months to September. That's a slight drop on the 9% recorded last month in August. So we'll take that, a slight drop from last month. So as part of a drugs programme, it's been launched for GAA clubs in Waterford. Top referee Alan Cassan, he says the lack of awareness campaigning was an indictment on members and leadership. They're being urged, GAA clubs, to act on the rampant recreational drug use. And there is a programme already been rolled out in Carlow and Kilkenny in recent months. That's seeing Gardaí and family resource groups visiting individual GAA clubs to speak to members on the use of drugs. And the programme has launched in clubs in Waterford. And old Owen Dalton is joining me now. He is freelance journalist and based in Waterford. He joins me this afternoon. Hello to you, Owen.
Hi, Ciara.
So tell us a bit more about this, because I think, you know, people, wherever they're local, whatever club is local to them, they will know and have heard about recreational drug use maybe happening within the community, not necessarily in terms of people who are parts or members of GAA clubs. So I suppose that the worry is there to make sure that they can keep as many people away as possible from potential drug use. So tell us more about this programme. What's happening with it? As I said, our neighbours over in Carlow and yourself, a Kilkenny man, they have been rolled out there in recent months.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's originated, I suppose, from the Garda Division, which oversees those three counties, Carlow, Kilkenny and Waterford. And I suppose you could look at it, and it was a point made by some of those there the other night, it's in all parts of society. So it should not be a surprise that it's in different sports clubs, not just GAA, but I suppose it can be across the board. And what's happened is I guess, GAA does have that strong presence, particularly in these counties in particular. And so it's a way of, I guess, trying to utilise that to try and set up, maybe more communication channels and also perhaps greater education and awareness around the effects that drugs can have, I suppose, on mental health.
Now, you have written in an article that is across a good few of the papers today, the Irish Sun, I believe, the Irish Examiner also. Drug use in the GAA has become rampant in recent years. That is what Councillor George Henderson is saying. He is recovering from alcohol and cocaine addiction.
That's right. And so George Henderson is a drug addiction counsellor. And he would be a staunch GAA man in Waterford as well. He'd be very well known, I think, in the region. And he was speaking, this was on Thursday, on Wednesday night, I should say, and it was a get-together, I suppose, held to begin the rollout of it in Waterford, and so media were invited as well. And George Henderson spoke about calls he has received in over probably the past year or so from clubs, people he would know, not just in Waterford either, but in other counties, and that basically due to his own advocacy work in the locality, they would know of him. And he explained that he had been contacted in particular by one club who had said that, you know, one of their key players, they believed that he was using drugs. They believed that, you know, it might have been causing problems for him as well. It was becoming a problem, his drug use. And they were wondering how to deal with it. And, you know, and George Henderson used this example the other night. The club wondered, what if they were to make him the captain of the team? He was already a key player, and perhaps the captaincy would, that level of responsibility would maybe help things turn around for him off the field. And Henderson was very clear about this, that it just, that in his view, just will not help. And taking on his own, I suppose, background in addiction from when he had a cocaine alcohol addiction, and he would have had a young child as well, and he was explaining that, you know, his life, a lot of it was falling down around him.
I suppose there, that's maybe a lack of education, because people know addiction. Well, some people may not know, but addiction is a disease. So it would be very presumptive of anybody to think just because you hand a, you know, a captain or, you know, maybe more responsibility within a working role or in family life, whatever it may be, that's not going to stop the disease from affecting you.
And this was something George Henderson, I think, made very clear. His own, he spoke quite powerfully on it. He simply said to this man, to this club chairman, don't do it. This man, this player, unfortunately, he will let you down. He can't help it. He let himself down. He let the club down. And he let everyone down around him. And he was just talking about how that, to him, would be just enabling that troubled individual to do whatever they want, by trying to give them that responsibility to, I suppose, try to get them out of a hole. And he said, look, the approach needs to be simpler, you know, really, which is you need to be able to talk to the player. And those conversations, no doubt, are very difficult. But he was speaking about how you need to be able to give anyone in that position an option, offer them support and offer them help. And, you know, and I suppose from there, and this was something that was the point made by, we heard from the family resource group in Waterford, and they would be, similar groups would be based around every county. And they were just talking about how, you know, they deal with families directly, and it's a thing of education. It's a thing of offering that support through, I suppose, not just talking, but also, I guess, guidance and possibly eventually counselling as well.
We're discussing Garda Inspector also here, Alan Cassan. He's a national advisor to Croke Park for football. And he told the meeting that you were at that he has seen behavioural issues of fellas on the field who I know personally have been taking drugs off it. That was a direct quote from him. He's also, as I said, a Garda. He's stationed in Waterford. So one could assume that these incidents are happening there, but really they are happening across the whole country, including in this county.
Absolutely. I suppose for Alan Cassan, he would have previously been stationed in Carlow, and he's a Tipperary man originally, and he would be involved really across the southeast. And I think he was making that point himself, that he had seen it in up to about maybe six different counties, including the likes of Leach and Wexford. And I suppose this thing, he's a man who's very much embedded in GAA, embedded in GAA circles on a national level as well, and through his work with Croke Park. And then he's a very senior member of An Garda Síochána Cónaí, also as an inspector. And he was explaining that, you know, and this, I think, is a very common thing, and I would cover the courts here in Waterford and Kilkenny quite a bit, and I think anyone in any county will see this as well, that there will be teenagers who will have promising careers as GAA players or in other sports as well, and only, as Alan Cassan said, they will then fritter away from the scene, and you'll see them maybe 5-6 years later ending up in court having been caught with drugs. And that's something I would see as a court reporter as well, where you know that background in GAA is referenced more often than maybe people would realise, and it's clear that just something went off the rails in that particular person's life at some point, and it could be a bereavement, it could be a particular change in their own circumstances, and it ends up on a path that. It's clear, you know, it carries such enormous difficulty for that one person.
Abuse of referees is something that has come up in particular of late the past few weeks. There have been incidents across the country, and talks of that 96-week ban being made into a permanent ban. Have you heard much on banning, how it's going to work? Any, I guess, good news or encouraging news for referees that they can feel more confident and more safe, I guess, to get back on the pitches? Not that it happens everywhere, but it does seem like it's happening more frequently.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose maybe what's happened here as well is it's being highlighted more, and maybe there is a little bit of a enough is enough kind of stance coming from the referee side of the GAA. I would know a couple of referees myself, and they would often speak about just the difficulty in trying to get people to referee matches, and a lot of it stems back to this this issue of growing abuse of match officials. Only in Waterford this week we had incidents where an under 12 hurling game had to be abandoned just on Monday night gone due to an alleged abuse towards a match official, and the Waterford GAA even confirmed that following the match, they said that had to be prematurely terminated, and that they're currently investigating the matter. And that's at the end of the day, that is an under 12 game where there's 11-year-olds playing. And I've actually seen this. Some of these incidents, funny enough, here do end up in the courtroom as well. And I would have covered one particular prominent case in the past 12 months where a incident on the sidelines at a match ended up resulting in a man being brought before the courts here in Waterford. In terms of changes at the national level, as far as I understand, I think there seems to still be a bit more work to do around that, but it definitely seems that the wind is going in one direction, given some very high profile incidents over the past fortnight.
Okay, well, thank you so much for speaking with me this afternoon. That is Owen Dalton. He is a freelance journalist. His article headlined in a few of the papers, including the Irish Sun and the Irish Examiner today, GAA clubs urged to act on rampant recreational drug use. Thank you for joining me, Owen.
Thank you, Vera.
We're going to be turning now to some news we heard earlier this morning. The Justice Minister said a multi-agency approach is needed. This is to divert people with mental health illnesses or substance abuse illnesses from engaging with a crime. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by the Executive Director of Irish Penal Reform Trust. That is Saoirse Brady. Hello to you today, Saoirse.
Hi, Ciara. Thanks for talking to me today about this important subject.
It's very interesting. It's a new report, and it's recommended a number of things. But first, if we focus on those who may be in Ireland's prison system with mental health illnesses, or those who may suffer from addiction to certain substances, how are they helped at the moment with that while they are in prison?
At the moment, we have a lot of people in prison or in the criminal justice system who have mental health or addiction issues, or sometimes both. And I suppose we would welcome the fact that this high-level task force has recognised trauma is also very often a cause or, you know, a result of mental health and addiction issues. So people in the prison system are maybe up to 4 times more likely to have a mental health issue. And sometimes that is quite severe. So while the prison service does its best to try and cope with this, we know that there are people in there who are in for very minor offences, or sometimes on remand, which means they haven't yet been sentenced. who would probably benefit from treatment in the community rather than being put in prison, which can exacerbate an issue. So we've heard of people going in on very short sentences for very minor offences, who are put on a waiting list to see a counsellor or some sort of mental health professional or an addiction counsellor in some instances. But sure, by the time the waiting list comes round to their turn, they're already out again. And that means that they're back out into the community without the help that they actually require to address these issues. And, you know, we have heard, both anecdotally and even in media reports, of judges remanding people to custody to try and get them the treatment that they need, to try and get them the services that they need. But there is so much pressure on the system, both inside and outside now, that I would say they're not getting that treatment at all. And that benefits no one.
Now, today's report was published by the High Level Task Force set up to consider the mental health and addiction challenges of people who come into contact with Ireland's criminal justice sector. And it's very lengthy, 231 pages. There's a series of recommendations. If I look to those that are pleading not guilty by reason of insanity, it's the narrowing, it's worded here, of the ingredients needed to find a person not guilty by reason of insanity. What does that mean to us who aren't au fait with the legal system?
So that means that they're looking at parts of the legislation that are really complicated to actually assess. I suppose what they want to do is look at this particular test to make sure that nobody ends up in detention indefinitely, you know, because if somebody does plead or is found not guilty by reason of insanity, then they're usually remanded or placed in the central mental hospital. We know there's not enough space in there at the moment. But also, you know, from a human rights point of view, you want to ensure that people who do have capacity to know what they've done are treated equally and that they are brought to trial and that they are able to, you know, they're properly assessed and that they're not held indefinitely, which can often happen. So really that test, it's really to try and ensure that it is properly applied and that people who do fall within the remit of it, you know, that they should be and that they're not actually, you know, bringing people into that. You know, they talk about people or they talk about the fact that people who have committed an offence for fraud, for example, that this shouldn't be applicable to them. So, you know, it is quite, it is a very legalistic test. It is very technical, but I think they're just trying to clarify that and make sure it applies to people who it should apply to.
Now, the report, it does contain a number of these actions that are to be implemented over the coming years. When they use the word coming years, is there a specific date within that?
So they have a number of recommendations, or they have 61 recommendations within the report, and they talk about short-term, medium-term and longer-term. So in terms of the short-term, they're talking about some of those being brought in immediately, and they think some of them, like the extension and expansion of the adult cautions for particular minor offences, where maybe somebody is in possession of a small amount of drugs for their personal use, that, you know, you could extend the adult caution system there to ensure that they get treatment rather than go into the criminal justice system. But I suppose those kind of ones they think they can do immediately. Then they're talking about for those other short-term ones that it might take up to a year or 18 months to implement those. The medium-term is around 3 years. And then the longer term ones are around 5 years to implement. But we know that change won't happen overnight and something will take much longer.
Absolutely. That's something that many people feel like happens all across different sectors in Irish society. Saoirse, if we look at one of those, it's noting here in the report that Gardaí should be trained in addiction awareness. There's kind of two things to take on that there. In this county, for example, where, you know, we've a huge population in Kildare, so close to obviously the capital city. So many more people are moving here. We've got more houses being built. We know from Census 2022, just the the preliminary results that the population has increased and will increase. Last year, Budget 2022, it was announced by Pascal Donoghue, 800 new Gardaí were going to come into the force across the whole of the 26 counties. This year, Budget 2023, 1,000 new Gardaí were announced. Here in this county, we definitely lack the number of Gardaí per population. So that is one worry to have, that extra training needs to be needed in these other areas for obvious reasons, but we can understand how that may feel far off because we already have such a problem with the numbers of Gardaí in this country. And then if you look to the other side of that, Saoirse, a lot of people would say Gardaí are missing empathy when it comes to their dealings with these people who are in the system who may have these addiction issues.
I think, well, there's a couple of things there. One, the announcement of new Gardaí, I think that presents an opportunity to build trauma-informed training and, you know, awareness of addiction and mental health issues into the training for those new Gardaí. But that won't be enough in itself. We will also have to see training for existing Gardaí. And I suppose the other thing to say is we really welcome the fact that they are talking about the need for training, the need for empathy for Gardaí, but also for everyone within the criminal justice system. So they're also talking about this. You know, it doesn't just fall to the guards. It doesn't just fall to the prison officers. They're also talking about, you know, supports for the judiciary to recognise these issues as health issues and not just criminal justice issues, and look at what the variety of sanctions that may be available, treatments that may be available to ensure that people don't end up in the prison system. But I think, you know, I'm looking at this, I take your point, Ciara, but I'm looking at it as an opportunity because I think we can start building in those really crucial awareness training pieces, particularly around trauma. I think that's something that we've all become more aware of. And, you know, I think all of us, to some degree, have some
suffered
element of trauma,
yeah, absolutely,
in their lives. But some people more than others. And if we think about who ends up in the criminal justice system, there are people who have mental health issues. Like if we look at the youth justice system, for example, in Oberstown, when you look at when you break down the population there, for example, travellers make up 1% of the overall population, but 25% of the people in Oberstown.
Yeah.
We look at people who have lost a parent, and that's either through going into the care system, through bereavement, or because their parents have gone to prison.
I know.
They're overrepresented in the system.
I am cutting you off, and I don't mean to because I don't want to hear it. You are right. The marginalised sectors of society are those who find themselves in the justice system a lot more than those who are not marginalised. We know those stats are there, and you're absolutely making your point very, very clear. But unfortunately, I am stuck for time this afternoon.
No problem. Sorry
to interrupt you there, but thank you for taking the time to discuss that report by the Task Force. It was published by the Health and Justice Departments. They're saying a multi-agency approach is needed to rehabilitate offenders, and specific things like Gardaí needing to be trained in mental health awareness, and obviously having more empathy. This is every member of society, and as Saoirse Brady, the Executive Director of the Irish Penal Reform Trust, pointed out, those marginalised group in society, they are much more likely, 10s, 20s times more likely to end up in Ireland's justice system. Yesterday morning, it was announced that Bank of Ireland were fined a record €100.5 million. That is over the bank's treatment of customers in the Trackage Morgher scandal. I'm joined now by General Secretary of the Financial Services Union. That is John O'Connell. You're very welcome to Kildare Focus this afternoon, John.
Thank you very much, Ciara. Delighted to be here.
So the Deputy Governor of the Central Bank said the fine was, in quotes, significant but necessary. Dervil Rowland also called the bank's handling of the tracker mortgage reckless. How do we make sure nothing like this ever happens again?
I think there's a number of things that have happened, some that are underway. So, for instance, the government are putting in place legislation, the Senior Executive Accountability Regime, which will hold people accountable as opposed to institutions. So that's one very strong way, because we know across the globe that fining institutions doesn't work. It doesn't have any impact. If you see the Bank of Ireland fine, they actually have made provisions in their accounts for the past
120 million.
Yes, for 120 million.
I've heard from people saying they should have gone in and just taken the whole 120 on top of the 100.5.
Well, they were actually fined 143 million and they get a discount then for a technical agreement with the central bank.
What? They get a discount for doing that?
Of 30%. So the actual fine was 143 million. So the other things that can happen and that we are campaigning very strongly for is a change in the governance model of the banks. And what we mean by that is currently banks are driven solely to respond to shareholders. So it's about a return for the shareholders, dividends for the shareholders. And where we're saying now, with just three banks left in this country, we need a stakeholder model. And what that means is that it can't be just driven for the benefit of shareholders. It has to take account of stakeholders. And we believe that worker directors and indeed consumer directors should be on the boards of the banks. And I think if they were on boards of the banks prior to this, these issues wouldn't have happened.
You know, out of the 50 properties that were taken, 25 of those were family homes. And it's really hard to wrap your head around the possibility of getting your family home taken away from you. Charlie Weston is writing today in the Irish Independent about one Kilkenny man, Tony Lawler, celebrating after the fine yesterday. The bank did deny him and 16,000 others good value tracker mortgages. He has been fighting Bank of Ireland for 12 years trying to get the tracker mortgage restored. He's a retired registered paramedic. He claims he had a tracker for 6 years, but he alleges the bank changed his terms and conditions in 2010, forcing him to the more expensive variable rate mortgage. He claimed before the Oireachtas Finance Committee that the bank engaged in quotes, a reign of terror in moving him and other customers off tracker mortgages. He goes on to discuss the fact that he's still fighting the bank. He has had to stop paying his mortgage as the expense has been too much for him. He's 60 years old and he had to retire early from the HSE in 2014 after he had a heart attack when attending the scene of a multiple vehicle crash in County Carlow. So obviously nobody can say, you know, the health problems one has is from not being given the tracker mortgage that you may have wanted. But a stressful financial situation like that, John, is going to cost people their health. And it also means Ireland's health services impacted, meaning everybody else in society are impacted. This is, you know, a cycle that will continue if it's not put a stop to.
Correct. And you have to have empathy with those affected by this scandal. You just can't but be touched by a story like that and thousands of others, 40,000 families impacted in relation to it. And those people have a right to expect that people will be held to account, not just institutions, but those who made those decisions. Because when you read the central bank report, which I've gone through in some detail, and it's the same for all the other institutions, so this isn't just a Bank of Ireland story, it's a broader than that. What banks did, as outlined by the central bank in the report, to deny people their rights in terms of access to their tracker mortgages and reverting back to tracker mortgages and so forth, goes to the culture of those organisations, that they think, as the central bank said, it's okay to put the bank's betterness or strength and profit in that ahead of their own customers. And that's the big thing that has to change. It takes time, but it will require a rethink in terms of the model. And the model currently is everything is okay if we get a proper return for our shareholders, whereas we take a view that there's three banks left. They must take a societal view of what's good for society. And that's called stakeholder banking. It's common throughout Europe, but we believe the old governance model is seen to have failed now and requires that new vision. In terms of, and very fortunately, Ciara, the minister initiated a banking review, which is due to report in November. And we have made very strong representations and presentations, indeed, to the Department of Finance to say that this is the way of the future, that banks can no longer be left to govern themselves, that there has to be input from consumers and there has to be input from staff.
I just want to go back over some figures because the first figures I gave out were wrong. 327 people lost their properties and nearly 198 of those were family homes. And it's been noted, John, that this scandal is not over despite the fine. People, as you say, still suffering. You know, empathy is obviously needed. And the figures, they never tell the full story.
They never tell the full story. And like, if it's only one person lost their home, that would be absolutely a scandal. The amount of people that have been impacted by this, and as you say, it's ongoing for some people, including the gentleman you refer to. So everybody needs to think that there has to be a better way. So the Sears legislation, that will help. The consumer code from the central bank to protect consumers is 10 years out of date. It refers to an era before neobanks like N26 and Revolut and so forth, before we had banking apps, before there was such wide-scale closure of branches and so forth.
John, I want to ask you a quick question before I have to go at 3 o'clock. I have a text in here from Elaine. She says, can you ask if it's too late to have your tracker checked? I have a tracker, but my bank has made quite a number of mistakes over the years on different things, which doesn't inspire confidence. How do I get a check, she asks.
I think you can get assistance. There's a financial ombudsman that can assist in terms of providing advice. There's financial advisors as well. There's some very good financial advisors that will assist people in looking, first of all, do they have a case and that. So I'd encourage them to get some professional advice. There are organizations, like I said, the financial ombudsman and so forth, who can guide you through assessing in the first instance if you have a case for the bank to answer.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. That's John O'Connell. He's the General Secretary of the Financial Services Union about the Bank of Ireland being fined that record number, €100.5 million, getting a discount of 30%. Originally, the fine was €143 million. And if anybody wants more information, of course, the advice from John and others is to get in touch with some of the experts in the area who can help you out, of course. And Elaine, if we can help you out in any other way, do get in touch with us again and we'll give you out numbers, etc. I'm just a little bit stuck for time here. That's why, unfortunately, I just can't go into the whole situation there.